Good morning, everyone. Welcome. So wonderful to see so many people here on a Monday morning at our lovely Zendo here in Worcester. I imagine that a lot of us are here because today is a holiday, and we're able to take a little time off of work. And so today is Martin Luther King Day. And I've been thinking a little bit about Dr. King and the need for struggle and resistance, and the terrible price that he paid for that, and still this resisting, doing what we can about injustice is such an important thing. And this has been particularly clear to me lately, but I realize that for many people this has always been clear. So the piece that I'd like to investigate a little bit this morning is from our great ancestor, Ehe Dogen, the founder of our Japanese Soto line, who went to China to receive what he considered more authentic teachings than he could find available to him in Japan. And he did this at great personal risk, making this sort of journey, but it was very important to him, and I find that to be quite inspirational as well. This huge desire to investigate what it is that is important in life, and this piece is a part of what he saw, and I'm not terribly familiar with this piece, so you know, we're just starting to investigate it, and so I just wanted to try and call out a few little bits. First, let me read it again to you. This is Busho, Buddha Nature. And this is what we have for part one in our liturgy book. The Buddha said, if you want to understand Buddha nature, you should intimately observe cause and effect over time. When the time is ripe, Buddha nature manifests. The words understand Buddha nature do not only mean to know it, but also to practice it, to realize it, to expound it, and to let go of it. Expounding it, practicing it, realizing it, letting go of it, missing it, and not missing it, are all cause and effect over time. You observe cause and effect over time through observation of cause and effect over time. You observe it with a whisk and a staff. However, you may also observe it through the wisdom of desire, the wisdom of beyond desire, original enlightenment, embryonic enlightenment, no enlightenment, or true enlightenment. Intimately observe is not limited to observing, being observed, correct observation, or wrong observation. It is intimately observed. As it is intimate observation, it is not self-observation or others' observation. Intimate observation is cause and effect as they are over time. And it is beyond cause and effect. It is Buddha nature as it is. It is becoming free of the body of Buddha nature. It is Buddha and Buddha as they are. Nature and nature as they are. There is no time when the time has not yet arrived. There is no Buddha nature that is not actualized. So, my sense is that there's quite a lot here packed into this one little piece. So I'm just going to call out a couple of things to take a look at here. And one is this bit about time being ripe. He says, and this is actually a quote from the Buddha that Dogen is working with. He says, if you want to understand Buddha nature, you should intimately observe cause and effect over time. When the time is ripe, Buddha nature manifests. So a little bit further on in this piece, Buddha nature, Dogen is talking about, you know, what this might mean, this when the time is ripe, Buddha nature manifests. And he says, hearing the words when the time is ripe, many people, both in the past and present, have thought that it means we should wait until Buddha nature manifests in the future, that as a result of practice, we will eventually encounter the time when Buddha nature manifests, and that when the time is not ripe, Buddha nature will not manifest, even if we inquire about Dharma from a teacher and endeavor in the practice of the way. So, in working with this, Dogen says, basically, no. We aren't waiting for Buddha nature to manifest. He says, when the time is ripe, it means that the time has already arrived. There is no time when the time has not yet arrived. There is no Buddha nature that is not actualized. Actualized in this very moment, right here, right now. So, the time is already ripe. So what do we mean by this intimately observed? He says, intimately observe is not limited to observing, being observed, correct observation, or wrong observation. It is intimately observed. So, Buddha nature is already here, already manifest, already our own functioning right here and now. And this intimately observe is what we're doing here, right? This is our practice. David often says closing the gap between ourself and ourself. This is intimate observation. It's not trying to stand outside of the stream of thought maintain some special viewpoint, standing apart and being mindful of what is arising. This is not dualistic at all. It's not observing self or observing other or some right sort of observation or wrong sort of observation. It's just this intimacy. Our Zazen practice. Noticing how cause and effect, cause stuff to arise. Thoughts and sounds and images and feeling and body sensations and just allowing our attention to be intimate with all of this, not looking away, not avoiding. But there's something deeply not special about doing this. Right? It's just being present to whatever arises, including the stuff that we wish were not arising. Perhaps particularly the stuff that is arising that we wish would not arise. And it's not a chasing after something else. Although it's very much seeing ourselves attempting to push away what's here and grasping after something that is not. So, what is it that we see when we investigate this Buddha nature arising in just this moment? Sometimes I think, well, so if this is the Buddha nature that is arising in just this moment, I'm kind of disappointed. Are you sure that this stuff that is arising right now is actually the thing itself that I'm supposed to be looking into? Because it sure doesn't feel that way a lot of the time. There's some special thing that I'm pretty sure arises sometimes, but is not arising right now, and that's the thing I really want to get to. And what? Just tell me, what is the, you know, what can I do in order to find this thing? Intimately observe what is already arising. This is the Buddha nature. But is it only this? Because if it's just what's right here now, I really would just as soon be, you know, watching the football game than being here in the Zendo. So in this Genjo Koan piece that we also read this morning, Dogen uses this example of going out into the middle of the ocean on a boat and being far enough out so that you cannot see any land. And it strikes me that this is a wonderful metaphor for much of my Zen practice on retreat, that I feel like I'm lost out in the middle of some ocean and all I can see is all this water. It's just a circle of water around me, and I really can't see any of the special stuff that I'm looking for, you know. And Dogen says, well, you know, so this great ocean, you know, it looks like many things, depending on your point of view, right? To a fish, I have this image of, you know, like this lovely coral reef, you know, and the sunlight coming in and the fish swimming around, and it looks like a palace. Or to a bird flying high above the ocean and watching the sunlight reflect off the surface, it looks like this jewel, like all these gems flashing, and oh my God, Buddha nature, I've found it. It's a palace. It's a jewel. And it is. It is. So I think, you know, so Dogen is affirming, right, that this ocean of Buddha nature, this wonderful thing that is everything that exists and transcends what exists. This is the Buddha nature, all of it. The part of it that is visible to me at this moment is this circle. I can only see as deeply into this ocean of Buddha nature as the eye of study and practice, my eye of study and practice, are able to see in this particular moment. And sometimes it's quite disappointing what I see. But nonetheless, our ancestor Dogen is encouraging us. He says, so all of this is the Buddha nature. And if you want to find it, it's right here in the functioning. What's right here is only different in cause and effect. And sometimes it's like this, and sometimes it's like that, and sometimes it's a palace, and sometimes it's jewels, and our life is meeting all of this. And beyond even that, he's saying that, so the path into realizing the full range, the depth of this ocean of Buddha nature is to pay attention to the little bit of it that's right here, right? And if we're willing to do that, there's the possibility of some opening of appreciation for this incredible aliveness and oneness of the universe. Compassion and love and caring and concern and responsibility for the whole catastrophe, because none of this does anything to make it so that the world is no longer a catastrophe. So how can we live in both, right? This great oneness, this emptiness, this connection, this love, this compassion, and this disaster, this injustice, the struggle, the resistance. How can we embody all of this? Dogen says, first, intimately observe your own experience. This is the path. Thank you. So, please sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Oh, yes. So, today we have our Dharma holders, Bob Waldinger and Mike Filicki, joining us up front here. Welcome, Bob. Thank you. So, questions, comments, observations, objections? Laura.
Thank you so much for your talk. I resonated with many things, but the ones that are most vivid for me right now are these beautiful images that you, these different views, the bird, how it looks to the bird from their view, how it looks to the fish, my view sitting in the boat as you were describing that, you know, seeing this, just it's just a circle, right? And just really appreciating this this shifting view, knowing that that I so easily can get caught and trapped in just the little tight, tiny, minuscule view that I have, and can't see anything else, just right there. And your encouragement, channeling Dogen to, as he says, and as you said, to intimately observe this little, tiny, small little view that can't be anywhere else, that can't see anything else than what's here.
Thank you.
But I think of William Blake when he talks about to see the world in a grain of sand and eternity in an hour. Here on retreat, we can see eternity in 25 minutes. Twice as fast as William Blake. But this observation that each particle contains the whole, right? Where is the great universe? Where is the great universe? Just whatever little piece is everything, is the great universe giving itself to us.
I just want to add to that. He also says, who's to say what's in the eye of a single bird?
This, when you were reading this, it invited me in a funny way. I find Dogen could be so hard to understand, but when he was talking about the Buddha nature, cause and effect, intimately observed, and he kind of riffs on each one, and it was the rhythm. I had this image of a hacky sack game. You know, observation, no observation, right observation, wrong observation. The beanbag that people are keeping in the air with their feet, and he's keeping all of this stuff in the air.
That's my experience of reading Dogen. and I think he's being quite purposeful. That into him, you know, because if we, because these beautiful lines, and we go, oh yeah, and then the next line is what?
Yeah.
just so wonderful. You know, this disturbing quality of the teaching. What's being disturbed is the mind of certainty. Mm-hmm. I know what's going on. It's a jewel. Yeah. See you later. Right, Steph. That's beautiful.
And I think he's giving this this long list of ways that we might understand, right, of the way to observe, right? Mm-hmm. And he's saying that, so it includes all of these, and no particular one is the, you know, the thing that we need to attain in order to, you know, observe in the right way. It's all of those, right? And he explores many of these things in more detail in other places, but this is, you know, a bit of a summary here on some of these that he goes into great depth in later. Thank you, Julie. Yeah, Eric?
I have this part to my practice where at the end I say thank you. And, you know, for me, the vow is a thank you for the gift. And so sometimes, of course, when I'm sitting, I'm struggling and in pain and confused. And yet I finish with that, thank you for the gift. And sometimes it feels so sort of odd to be thanking for pain and confusion. But I think your reading sort of speaks to the importance of that, because they're, you know, looked at from another view, it's a jewel or a palace.
And who can say, right, what the value of the gift of this very moment is, right? It may turn out to be totally different than how it appears to us, you know, right now, right? Who can say, you know, what losses or pain or whatever, you know, what the effects of that, it's just so, you know, there's no way we can actually know the outcome of what we do or the impacts of stuff on us or what we need, what we don't need, you know, what we would be better off without. We have all these opinions and very little to justify them. So I love this, yeah. So whatever arises is the gift, right? It's not trying to turn this stuff I don't like into some other sort of gift. It's yeah. So thank you very much for this gift. I really, you know, I'm not too sure about. Thank you.
We, you know, there's a going in a different direction, but maybe it's exactly the same thing. It strikes me, you know, around these forms in Zen, which are so different for some of us coming from other traditions, and no matter what has happened during those 25 minutes of Zazen, we bow at the end. Like, and when we walk in the room, except during when we're coming in and out of Dokusan, but, you know, we're coming to take our seat, we bow to the Buddha, we bow to our seat, which has been waiting there for us while we haven't been there, and then we bow to the community. And it can become like rote forms, but there's a sort of embodiment in the bowing itself that eventually generates the very thing that you're talking about, immense gratitude for this life, for the life that we have, even when it's sucky, you know, just to use a Buddhist phrase. and just, you know, thank you. There's a poem that... what's his name? Anyway, a Zen poet wrote that's called Thank You. And it's just sort of lists all the terrible things going on in the world and saying, but thank you. And by the end, it's like, oh, right, it's exactly what Steve's pointing to. And it's what Joanne pointed to the other day, this aliveness. Thank you. My knees hurt. Thank you. Everything is a jewel. Thank you. Right? And so we embody, in Zen, we really embody it. And we don't know that for a while. And we just go through the forms. And then, I don't know how many of you have had this experience of, oh, hands come together. The body inclines. What else is there?
And I think that when Dilgan is talking about intimately observing, that's the miracle, that we can intimately observe. I mean, that we can observe the aliveness, the suckiness, the miraculousness, that we have this capacity that's astonishing.
You know, one of the things that, Steve, you said, I'm going to paraphrase here, is touching and turning away are both wrong. But when we see ourselves touch or turn away, it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So,
could you say that again?
Yeah. Touching and turning away are both wrong. But when we see ourselves touching and turning away, it's right.
And if I may, that's a quote, right? Mm-hmm. Is it from the Jewel Merrick Samadhi? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which we recited mm-hmm. the other day. Mm-hmm. And the next
part is Steve's edition.
Well, because it is like massive
fire.
Massive, yeah. Yeah.
It is like massive fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa, it's big.
Yeah, and I mean, so to to just take a second with that, for me, what came up when Steve said that in slightly different words was that we can buy into our own resistance in a way where we really get sucked into it. And when we are aware that that is what is happening, we are awake.
Right.
And it's not a problem.
Right. So I saw Delina's hand.
Hi, I found the being, what was the word again? Intimately.
Intimately observed.
Observing very, very powerful, because when recently, but very often when I meditate, I can really see how deluded I am. In many different, I can see how murky my thoughts are, and all I want to do is turn away from that, thinking, oh, this is not it, but but turning away causes more suffering. It's this rejection, so there's probably a lot of value in intimately observing even that.
And particularly in the intimate observation of the desire to turn away, we do that.
And the wonderful thing about our practice is that, and I love the reading and Steve emphasizing, it's not about later. Right? It's not about, well, when I get over this place, then. But just what you're saying, seeing the mind, seeing, oh, I am not quite as clear as I thought I was. You know, that's it. That's the moment of waking up. Waking up to what's happening here. So the content, we keep, we're so attached to the content, right? And as Steve said, you know, all of us, I like that clear, open content, right?
Yeah.
But actually, that is so not the point. And so how wonderful to really begin to see, oh, it is actually this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, how wonderful. Thanks, Delina.
So, I'd seen a couple of hands that are calling.
Just call, somebody's okay. Raising their hand now.
So, James.
When I heard you speak of the perspective of the bird flying and seeing the jewels, I thought, I've been here for a couple of days and perhaps I should have stayed at home and drank a few cans of Red Bull. Red Bull gives you wings. and then I thought, well, then I would just stay up there. And it led me to realize that more and more over the last couple of days, that just meeting and meeting and meeting, that I'm somehow alive in a way I haven't known myself alive before. So if I can put that in a can.
Send a can. I'll take a case right now.
I'll credit you, Steve, on the can.
But what a wonderful way to put our practice, that we get to realize that we are alive in a way we hadn't known before. There's not some new aliveness that comes that we get, but we see, oh, all along.
And you know, as many times as we talk about this, it's an unbelievable thing. How could this be the Buddha nature manifesting? And when we start to feel it, like you're describing, Seamus, or actually all of everyone who's spoken, I find it so reassuring. And it's a quite a radical teaching. It's part of the Zen tradition. Already Buddha. No waiting. And waiting. To realize.
I'm waiting. Jenny?
Just that quick, intimate observation about Kinhin that I keep having to notice it over and over again. But the feet fool me, but the shoulders don't work.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is true.
Whoa. But I keep forgetting.
Thank you, Jenny.
I'm a little sick here.
So, Ray,
say it again.
Just let's
let
see.
It go. Yeah.
Let it go.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
So, walking in the Kinhin line, right? Sometimes we can find it helpful to, you know, we get confused about trying to follow footsteps, right? And people can change how their feet move pretty quickly. Whereas if you watch their body move through, you know, looking up towards their shoulders, they can't really hide how they're moving, right? Because of that, at least that's how I take it. And thank you for that observation, Jim.
There is too, just to connect to that, sometimes I watch Kinhin and I step out, especially when we've got a lot of new people. And there are some people who are doing sort of this ancient monk in the monastery practice where their heads are just hanging. And, you know, I think we're looking at people's feet. But the posture maintains itself every moment. So we don't actually hang our heads during Kinhin. We have Zazen posture in Kinhin. And then you can see those shoulders. But we're trying so hard to figure out, and then again, view, big picture, upright practice. Quite consistent.
And on that note, let's sit and then move into Kinhin.